I mean, let's just call it what it is. Like, most marketers or sales leaders aren't good at math, right? Like, so are they even the right people to be building?
Which is so scary to say, and it's the truth.
I would like to say, for the record, I would like to brag that I am pretty damn good at math, all right? So just, there's at least one. I've met some others. I was actually, freshman year, I was an economics and math double major. I didn't say it that way, but like, you know.
Why are you in marketing?
Because I was like, who am I? And then I was an economics and art history major, so that kind of makes more sense.
One major wasn't enough to get a BOGO out of that one.
I did. I was an overachiever back then. Now I'm lazy.
Here's what go-to-market teams are missing. Proof. That's what I think of every morning when I fire up LinkedIn and scroll through boring manifestos and endless lukewarm takes, because opinions are cheap and proof is gold. I'm Mark Huber, and this is The Proof Point, a show from User Evidence that helps go-to-market teams find new ideas, frameworks, and tactics that actually work today. Each episode includes an unfiltered discussion with the biggest names in B2B SaaS to help me find the proof points that I'm in search of. Hot takes always welcome.
For today's episode of The Proof Point, I actually wish that we would have recorded this a few months ago when I first started this process. As a first-time VP of marketing, building a revenue model was something I had absolutely no idea how to go about doing. I had never done it before, which is why I'm so excited to have two people who know a lot about this and a special guest that you'll hear from a little bit later in the episode. First up, we have Adam Goyette. I've gotten to know Adam over the last couple of years. He's one of the first true marketing leaders that I've looked up to, and he can run laps around most people when it comes to this topic. And one of my favorite marketers that I've met over the last couple of years is Emily Kramer. She is an absolute riot, and if you don't believe me, just listen to this episode and it will further prove that. She's got one of the most impressive track records that I've seen as a marketing leader. Her Market One newsletter is one of my favorite newsletters, and there's a zillion of them out there that I truly read every single time I see it. And she's probably more passionate about this topic than I've ever seen anyone passionate about any marketing topic. You're in for a treat, I promise.
So I'm really excited we're having this conversation because it still blows my mind how few marketing teams, or really go-to-market teams in general, have actual plans. Like, by plans, I mean, like, have a forecast, have goals beyond, like, we're going to hit this number of MQLs that we pulled out of the sky, or this pipeline number that we're basically also just pulling out of the sky. And they just don't have these plans. They don't have mapped out, like, the big rocks or the big things they're going to do that are actually going to move the needle. Or even worse, these teams just don't have reporting. Like, they don't have full funnel reporting. Maybe they have reporting from, like, qualified lead or lead through the rest of the funnel, but they don't have top of funnel reporting. They don't know where people came from when they came inbound on the website. They don't really have that much connecting going on between what's even happening on the outbound side. And so you really just have a mess. And so you can't really plan to grow really fast when you have a mess and you don't know what you're doing and you don't know what happened before. So it boggles my mind slash makes me a little crazy slash is shocking when I see this, even at companies, and even seen this with companies that have like $100 million in revenue. So this is a pervasive problem, drives me crazy. No matter what stage you are, well, Series A and beyond, I'll say, as a general rule, you need to have full funnel reporting. You need to have a forecast based off this that starts at top of funnel and is a bottom-up forecast. And you need to have a marketing strategy and goals with big projects that will actually move the needle. You need to know how you're going to hit those numbers. So I think one of the reasons why this usually goes so wrong and why people don't have this is that planning processes suck. They're horrible. They like devolve into terribleness really, really fast. They're exhausting, boring. Nobody wants to be a part of these cross-functional planning processes and meetings. And you feel like you're checking boxes rather than actually figuring out what you're going to do and what's going to work and having the meaty conversations. Instead, like, people just waste so much time arguing about attribution, arguing about who's going to get credit for what. And like, here's the thing, like, no matter what, like, driving revenue, not a solitary sport. Most prospects are going to interact with marketing. They're going to interact with sales in non-linear crazy orders. So I don't know why we spend so much time on like this territorial problem when we should be spending time talking about the huge levers that are going to get us to triple growth, quadruple growth, pick what it is. And so the meetings are really part of the problem. The planning meetings, the planning processes are part of the problem of why all of these companies don't have these plans, don't have these reports, don't have these forecasts. These meetings suck. When I think about these meetings, these planning meetings, I get like flashbacks like to having like full body night sweats and like being in rooms and wanting to throw like whiteboard markers. I was trying to think of something like kind of nonviolent you could throw. I don't really throw things, but I think of, you know, I'm like, oh, I want to turn the table over. This is awful. Or I want to just like go to the bathroom every 5 minutes or like wander the office to get out of these meetings because they're awful. These are the meetings that are like finance, ops, sales, marketing. If you've been in one of these, you know the meetings that I'm talking about. They're like kindergarten. Give me a game. Kindergarten, Settlers of Catan, Squid Games, all mixed together, where people are just arguing about who's going to own what and take credit for what revenue, when really we're all on the same damn team trying to grow the company, both this month, next month, and in the long term. So we're all on the same page, but these meetings go so horribly. I'm almost done with my rants, I promise. Like, sales just cares about their quota. They're like, I might get a suit box of money at the end of the quarter. How can I make sure, like, that briefcase of money is like on my desk and like stacked with gold bars? Like, that's what they care about. They don't care really about anything else, if I'm being honest. At least ones that I've met don't. And like, I don't blame them. If I was gonna get like a money flying down over my desk at the end of the quarter, like, I might start to take credit for shit I had nothing to do with as well. You got finance, who really doesn't understand marketing. Finance, like, for being really good at math, they're really terrible at understanding marketing math. And like, all they want to know is like, this is our revenue goal. How much can each sales rep hit? Divide and tell me how many sales reps I need. Maybe they're going to understand paid marketing and they're like, we spend this much money, we get this amount out. But if it's not input and output, they really don't care, which is just really funny because, again, they're supposed to be good at math. But and then lastly, you've got marketing, who's just like, someone pay attention to me. Someone give me more headcount. Someone give me more budget. We're doing all this work over here. We're doing the Lord's work and nobody's paying any goddamn attention or giving us any budget. And then the last person that's usually in that meeting is ops. And ops is just like trying to wrangle and like look at their numbers and go into different reports. And at the end of the day, they usually report to sales. So really, they're just at their beck and call. So you've got these meetings with all of these different biases, with all of these different personalities, all trying to get something else. But you're never actually getting to what's a logical number we can hit that isn't going to fall out of the sky. And how the hell are we going to get there with the activities that we are going to do? And so excited to stop ranting and start talking with the rest of you about like how you actually make plans that work and avoid these meetings that make me want to leave the room and watch paint dry, pretty much.
So, Adam, I think we might just have to end the episode right there because I think Emily just said everything that
we got good problem.
Sorry, was that way too long of a rant?
No, it was money. I'm already thinking of all the hilarious things that we can add for graphics of all the examples that you mentioned.
Cool. I was trying to make a color font.
Yeah, I think you nailed it.
I think I was like spitting. Like, it's really, I was like trying to use my intense voice. So, you know, maybe you can animate that as well.
This is going to be hilarious if that is any indication of how the rest of the convo is going to go. So, Adam, why don't I give you kind of a layup question? Like, how the hell did we get to this point? Because I know that you probably feel the same exact way that Emily does.
Well, I think part of it is kind of the top-down approach, right? Where you have like board-level goals, company goals of we need X amount of growth, hit this valuation. And they're set in no context of reality, right? They're just like picked because, hey, we want to be valued at $500 million by the end of next year so we can go out and raise our Series B or whatever. And so here's the numbers we need to be at. And then that gets handed down to the CEO who's like, okay, sales, marketing, here's your targets. Like, go out and hit it or build your plans around this. And then you end up in this world where like sales and marketing, in the worst case scenario, are just off on their own building these plans. Best case scenario, they try to work together, but it's like half the time they don't even believe in the plan. Right. And it's like, and not many people in the company even realize this, but it's like they're
like
getting
75% of the time. 75% of the time you don't believe in the plan and you're just like, I just want this process to be over. Like, that's like, just want it to be over. We're gonna hit where we're gonna hit. Yeah. Like, this is useless. Like, most of the time.
Yep. Yeah, but it's like what they don't realize though is what's at stake, right? It's like a high stakes game because like everyone banks their hiring plans around that. They built comp plans around this.
Budgets.
So you miss because budgets, all of this, right? And most of the time, guess what happens? Sales and marketing just backloads the shit out of the plan because it's like, well, I'm not hitting it this quarter, so that'll give me time to hire and do all these things. And then you start hiring up all these people to hit these plans, and it's so poorly laid out that by the time you end up missing, it's like you have a pissed off sales team because none of them are hitting quotas, right? And you have a pissed off finance team because they've probably been supplementing that all year, like guaranteeing quotas, doing all these crazy sorts of things. And then you end up having to do layoffs because like you've gotten so far over in terms of over hiring, expecting to be at these numbers, and you're nowhere close. And so you have to course correct and then go into next year. And so what happens is, like, all because you were too afraid to kind of have the realistic conversation to say, like, where are we actually going to end up? Let's build our plan around that, right? And so I think having those hard conversations save you so much heartache, because even, like, you do layoffs, like, the morale of the company not hitting goal all year is like, man, talk about killing any sort of momentum, right? And the sad thing is, like, a lot of these companies are still growing, right? They might be growing at 50, 75%, but it's like, well, we based the whole model off of us 3Xing or whatever it is. And it's like, you're just not even close to that.
And like then said, we're going to grow sales linearly with that. And that's like what bums me out. Like, you're growing sales linearly with revenue. Like I said, like, what's our total revenue target? And like, usually you're just like doing basic division off of like one number that every, it doesn't, maybe it accounts for the ramp, maybe it doesn't of the sales rep, but like, it's pretty linear with revenue. And like, that doesn't need to be the case. Even if you are like set up to hit the plan, like if you use like marketing correctly, you can get a whole bunch of leverage and not need to grow linearly. And like, don't even get me started when it's like, we're going to hire like 20 SDRs, because there are tools today that can do the work of 19 SDRs and you just need one in like Clay or some other tool, right? So I think that's the big problem. And that goes back to like the finance thing, right? Like said more calmly, like finance wants the easy, like we input this many sales reps, we get this revenue. We put in this much paid budget and we get this result. And it's just, it's more complicated than that. And you need to lay out all of your different levers to your point. Like, what are the things we're actually doing to move the needle? Like, how is sales getting more efficient? How are we improving conversion rates? How are we juicing the top of the funnel? Are we raising prices? Like, are we not raising prices? Is the ACV going to go up? Like, which segment are we going to get more of? Like, none of that is actually talked about, because we just get stuck in that weird mess.
Quick question first, because when Emily and I were going back and forth on this to prep a little bit for the episode, she asked a question around, how do you define, you know, this and what do you call it? So I just went through this process recently at User Evidence, and I've been calling it like a pipeline or a revenue model, as long as it includes both of those things. What are the types of things that you typically include in this, Adam? And I guess, what do you call it in general?
Yeah, to me, it's the revenue model, right? And so I think what's included, I think, is you want a channel by channel kind of forecast month over month, I think, for what you're going to be doing in marketing. Because I think the other mistake people make is they simplify the model down to like MQLs. Well, you know, and I know, like an MQL that came in organically and hit the website because they're educated and they know what they want versus someone who clicks on a paid ad on Facebook are not the same, right? Like, and so you see wildly different conversion rates. So it's not as simple as, like Emily, like you said, it's like dollar in, dollar out. It's like, well, where specifically are we growing here? And then I think with that is, what's the plan that actually can support that? Like, how much money do I need to, if we're saying like we're going to 3X our search leads, like, okay, cool. But like, what do we actually think that'll take? And are we at capacity now for what we're doing? Can we actually effectively 3X our spend and keep the same levels of efficiency? Are we factoring in like any of the thrashing that's going to happen when you start ramping up your spend levels and it's like wildly inefficient? One of the big mistakes you see everyone make is they like plan for the best case scenario in every basically line. Yeah. It's like, you have this number where it's like, whoa. And it's like, well, sales, you know, productivity is going to go up. Our close rates are going to jump. Leads are going to get more efficient. And it's like, it's real easy when you're looking at a spreadsheet and you know you need to end up this number to be like, what happens if this moves up 5%? Like, amazing. There you go. So like, okay, we just need to get 5% more efficient on our ass. But there's no plan behind it, right? And so I think like with the growth and the model, is that's fine. But like, what's the plan? So if you have a number and they're improving, like, where's the plan of how we're actually going to do that sort of thing, right? If we're going to do something. And so I love like starting with the revenue model, but that needs to be based with a plan. Otherwise, it's like, it's just a spreadsheet and nobody looks at it until it's like the oh shit moment halfway through the year where it's like, we're way off, and sales are like, oh, really?
But that moment happens every year. It's like every year it's the same oh shit moment. And then every year the process just seems to get worse because it gets like more bureaucratic with like more steps and everyone gives up faster. So it's just like, kind of this like funny thing, and nobody really talks about how terrible this is.
No.
And the thing is, if you're like a mid-level marketer or any role, any revenue role, I always think marketers, I'm a marketer, I'm very self-centered, but if you're in any like revenue role, like this doesn't get better like as you get more senior. Like, you might think, oh well, the executives have it figured out when they talk about it. Like, no, they do not. I have been an executive and we do not have it figured out. It is, maybe it's worse. Because, you know, like often some of the executives like can't get into the weeds on some of this stuff. And so then it's just worse. So it doesn't get any better. We need to lay out like a tactical way to make this better, which is something that I, you know, try to do in my newsletters and such. But there's still a lot of like missing pieces. I'm still in rant mode because I just had something on my desk and I just hit it off. So if you hear a sound, we should make the sound effect louder because it's like, to your point, Adam, like, yeah, I guess I call it the revenue model or I call it the forecast. Whatever, but I call the whole process planning, which is very specific. It's not, but like I call the whole thing the plan. And to me, the plan to some people just means the forecast. And like, it's not. The plan is the top-down forecast that comes from finance, the bottom-up forecast that comes from, should come from marketing and sales and collaboration. Also, like, what are the goals? Like, dare I say OKRs or objectives and key results? I don't care if it's that or if it's goals or if it's something else. But what are the big things that are going to actually move the needle here and are going to cause those changes? So those things then lead to assumptions that get input into the bottom-up model. So you need the plans, the big things. Those then impact the forecast, the bottom-up forecast especially, as like assumptions. So for instance, like we are going to do every marketer's favorite thing to do. We're going to do a new website with new positioning. Joking, but not joking. And that's going to increase conversion rates. So let's put that into the model and increase conversion rates after that gets done in, say, April, not in January, the end of the year. And the other big thing here is like seasonality comes into play, you know, like any changes in the market, diminishing returns, as Adam said. So like all of these things, you know, come into play.
So if you couldn't tell by now, clearly Emily, Adam, and I just absolutely love building revenue models and everything that goes into this planning process. Maybe it's time to bring on that special guest who knows a thing or 12 about building revenue models. Let's bring on Jeff Ignacio, head of go-to-market operations and growth at Regrow Ag. So Jeff, we've landed on calling this a revenue operating model, and now we've heard a lot of who's sometimes involved in this process and many times who's not involved and should be. Who do you think should be involved in building a revenue model?
Well, with a mature planning process, the goal is to start early and to start thinking through a cadence of a top-down and a bottoms-up. So on a top-down basis, you're going to have some sort of expectation on what type of unit economics and overall metrics you want to hit. And then on a bottoms-up, you're starting to look at capacity and capability of the organization. So those folks that are involved, marketing, thinking about top of funnel, all the discretionary spend and programmatics, thinking about how you're going to build the pipeline that you're going to want to build for the following year. For the sales organization, if you have enough time, start looking at your deal velocity because that's going to inform all the metrics from my point of view. So sales leadership, sales operations, revenue operations, if they're an overlay across the entire ops organization. And then from the customer side of the house, if you're selling to the enterprise, you want to look at your renewals line by line and have a real strong assessment of customer health, renewability across all those lines. So that's on the go-to-market side of the house. Then from a planning side, you're going to want to t-shirt size your product roadmap and start thinking about your big bets or your small bets and your medium-sized bets for the following year, because that's going to unlock and open up new TAM for the go-to-market organization. If you roll into the following year with the same stuff that's in the warehouse, well, you're really not going to be able to compete against your peers. And so really thinking through, okay, what are the right size product investments? And that's a conversation between product marketing, sales enablement, sales leadership, and product to start thinking through, okay, what's on the roadmap that we can unlock for the following year? And then obviously you're gonna have to bring finance to the table. I think if you look at 2023, finance had a very large voice in planning, probably larger than any other year.
So that sounds like too easy when you frame it like that. Why, Emily, why does that not happen?
Because every team has different biases and different goals. Like I said in my rant up top, like you can get all those people in a room to plan, but you're just going to get into territorial, like weird. Again, what did I say? It's like Squid Games and Settlers of Catan meets Kindergarten. Like that's, I think that's what I said.
We're going to invent that board game after this. We can go start our own like business. We'll sell it in
the
like,
minus the dying, I hope.
Yeah, I'm fine with that.
Yeah, let's make it I mean, it's like maybe rule out some of the Squid Game stuff. But like, it does feel that way because, again, like every team has different motivations. And so it's really hard to just get everyone on the same page. And like, I don't know if I really even have a solution for that. Like, I don't know how to solve for. I think it's a good thing that sales and marketing have different motivations and should have different focuses. If you're doing it right, sales is thinking about quarterly revenue above all else and yearly revenue as well. And they're thinking about that. And marketing is thinking about obviously feeding that, but also feeding revenue in the long term. And marketing is thinking about the brand building and the like needs there to drive that. And they're thinking in different terms. I actually think marketing's thinking more like a product team. They're thinking, what are our big things? If there's a product launch, that's a big thing. But there's lots of campaigns and other things they can do that can be big things. So marketing, I say this a lot in my newsletter and LinkedIn, is really like kind of like a product org, not a sales org, and how they should be thinking about this. And so, you know, like if the teams are kind of like doing the right things and they have this shared understanding of and like of this tension and know that this tension is a good thing, I think you like kind of need to call it out. Like, I care more about this, you care more about this. Like, maybe it's just like people need to be honest here in the room. But the other thing that needs to happen is like, I think this is where ops can really help, is like you have got to have the foundational reporting and have the attribution arguments solved before you go into the planning process. The first time you're really getting into the nitty-gritty of like the reporting and the attribution issues is the planning process. The whole planning process is going to go south. So it's almost like mid-year, you should be like, let's do our attribution reporting reconciliation and see what's happening and like remove that from planning. Like the reporting that you're basing your bottom-up forecast on should be in a really solid place before you start this. So I'm just spitballing here on like, here's the big problem, but like, how do you solve for it? And I think you have to like divorce those two things. Well, not divorce them in terms of the planning process, but divorce the team get-togethers from each other.
So Adam, everything that we're talking about here sounds like it requires a lot of data. And if I've learned anything in being in B2B marketing for a while, it's most companies do not have good data. So like, how do you go about this with the reality of just not having great data to begin with?
Well, I think there's not having good data. And then I think there's also the reality of, I mean, let's just call it what it is. Like most marketers or sales leaders aren't good at math. Right? Like, so are they even the right people to be building?
Which is so scary to say, and it's the truth.
I would like to say, for the record, I would like to brag that I am pretty damn good at math. All right. So just there's at least one. I've met some others. I was actually freshman year, I was an economics and math double major. I didn't stay that way, but like, you know.
Why are you in marketing?
Because I was like, who am I? And then I was an economics and art history major. So that kind of makes more sense.
One major wasn't enough. You get a BOGO out of that one.
I did. I was an overachiever back then. Now I'm lazy. But anyway, some marketers are good at math, but it's few and far between.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think you have people who aren't even necessarily equipped. Like nobody teaches you also like how to do revenue planning and do these models as like a marketing leader. You step into a VP role for the first time, like you probably didn't market it. That's like, here you go.
Literally what I did for the last month. I was meeting with Kyle Lacy, and Kyle Lacy was like, do you have this? And I was like, what is that exactly?
That's what I mean. Nobody has it. That's what happens. Even when I talk to companies with a lot of revenue, I'm like, excuse me, what? You got to get it. All right, Adam.
I think it's one more fair. Yeah, I think it's about being transparent about like who's got the right skill set on the team. Also, I think where you have blind spots in the data, you have to just call that out, right? Like, because I think like, hey, we don't know where these are necessarily coming from. So it's hard for us to pinpoint specifically on these campaigns how we could scale it, right? And so I think you just have to be very honest and transparent. It can't be a spot where it's like you're getting judged because you're throwing out these things. And I think somebody has to be kind of like the party pooper, right? At the forecast to be like, well, you can't do that. That doesn't make sense. Or like not all these numbers are going to go up. Or like I think you mentioned like product, Jeff, throwing out like, hey, we're going to have these new products coming out this year. Like I can't tell you the amount of companies I've been at where that's been the conversation. And then it's like, okay, who's owning that number then? The $1 million we're expecting from the new product. Is that on product? Is that on sales? Is that on marketing? And then what happens when product ships it 3 months late? Right. And so I think there has to be like a little bit of like who's owning these numbers and who's ultimately like responsible for it. Because I think like a lot of the times in those meetings,
so
it is a little.
Who should own this?
I've rarely met a CEO that like wants to own that. I don't know if you were saying the CEO, you were cutting out, but like, yeah. I don't know that CEO doesn't want to own that.
So who should own it then?
I don't necessarily think it's finance. Finance should own getting it done. Finance does not understand how these teams work, like, to be honest. I mean, again, I think it's ops. Like, I was working with a company recently. Love this company. Love the team. They're going to know if they listen to this, I'm talking about them. But they're great. But, like, the person that was doing it on ops, that was doing this process, like, had never done it before. And like, it needs to be someone that's done it before. That's for sure. I don't know. Like, I'm sitting here thinking, I'm like, should this be something that you bring in like an outside person to help with? Like, is this a situation where like there should be like a proctor? What's the term I'm looking for? It's not proctor.
I'm going to forever think of proctor when I do planning now.
What?
Like an auditor or a chaperone?
A mediator?
Or a babysitter?
All of the above. Like, name the thing. Like, you need like a third, like a neutral party that understands all these things. That's your like your guide, your spirit guide on this. Like, I wonder, because none of us can say who owns it, and all of us probably believe that someone has to own any project for it to be successful. So I don't know.
So Jeff, what do you think? Because you sit in an interesting spot across all of this. You are literally the babysitter.
Well, I have a finance background, so I built these revenue operating models as a FP&A leader and now as a RevOps leader. So these models, at the end of the day, they have to be able to describe the behavior and what actually happens within the business. And simply put, you can think about a manufacturing model. You take some inputs, and at the end of the day, you have some outputs. The model is what happens in between. The model helps to describe what happens in truth. So for example, if you're a marketer, you have a bunch of channels and you have an allocation of budget, and the goal is, where are you going to spend your chips? And throughout the year, you might even make adjustments. So in-year adjustments, you might change your campaign, you might change your channels, and all of that has to cascade through the model. But you know, you have a plan going into the year, the rubber hits the road as soon as the year starts, and you might find that what you thought was your persona or your ICP or where buyers become aware is just didn't materialize. So you might have to make those adjustments real time. Same thing happens on the sales floor. The people you think are going to close deals, they might leave. So maybe your most tenured reps quit Q1, Q2. Now you have to backfill. You backfill those folks, they have to ramp. It takes 3 to 6 months to get them ramped. SDRs, a team that is famous for high turnover. What if you have higher than expected turnover on there? So there's a lot of things that happen in between on Jan 1 to December 31st that happens that you can't really control when you're planning for the business in mid-October. And then secondly, I would also call out a couple of things. The model has to be able to have some flexibility and some ranges so that throughout the year, you can start to call out why you think you're off track. It's kind of like a flight path, a plane going off, and it starts to deviate. You're going to get these alerts. Hopefully you have dashboards that tell you these things, and you have cadences to be able to talk to the team and find out what's happening. But you want to get that plane right on the track as quickly as possible.
It sounds scary because I should never be flying a plane, but how do you take like this model that lives in a spreadsheet, and let's say for the most part, everyone's doing this in a spreadsheet, with the exception of fairly, you know, advanced or more mature companies who are doing this outside of spreadsheets. But how do you go from spreadsheet to actually using this and turning it into something that works in real life?
Well, I think it's a couple of things. One, you want to prepare the organization to know what the goals are. Two, you want to prepare the org. So that's where enablement, leadership, and individual goals come into place. And then having everyone put together their plan. So if you're on the sales team, you're going to have an account plan, a territory plan, particularly if you're in the enterprise. If you have an inbound motion or a product-led motion, you're going to want to be able to track what's happening for activation signups and MQLs. And then as a revenue operations team, we're going to want to bring in the data. And we're going to have to be able to not only have the data, but have the appropriate cadences where we're all sitting with the right people, the right time, the right frequency to review those metrics and have the right conversations. Because that's where feedback loops are created. And once we get feedback from the org, this deal's on track, it's off track, the pipeline's on track or off track, we can start to gather that feedback, understand it, act on it, and then implement the changes. And so to me, it's a concerted effort. It's not on one desk or one function. It's a team effort, but you have to have the data, the goals, the leadership to inspire, and then the regular rhythms of the business to make sure you have those constant feedback loops.
Emily, is that real life?
No.
Sounds great.
I'm like, damn, Jeff, you've worked at some organized companies. Yeah. And I mean, I've worked at some organized companies. Like Asana is a very organized company. I spent 4 years there. I was there early days. So
I hope so. It's a project management tool.
It
better be organized.
I mean, the planning process there is like very much centered on like what are the things, what are the plans and projects and things that we're doing that are going to move the needle. And then comes the forecast. And like that's how it needs to be. And a lot of companies just like don't do it that way. Because someone comes in, like, you know, the board comes in and they slip a little note under the door that says like $100 million this year. And then everyone's like freaking out. So they just like stop to plan because they're like freaking out. How are we going to hit this versus like, let's logically go through this. So, I mean, I think like in an ideal world, yes. But I think a lot of companies and like depending on the stage of company, like you might only have one person in finance. You might have zero people in finance. You might only have one person in ops who's also responsible for like setting up Salesforce or HubSpot or whatever it is. So it's hard when there's not someone, you know, dedicated to this. And so it's like, well, how can we have a plan? And how can we have things that we're trying to do and make sure that we're not totally missing and actually check in on the plan? Because I think the biggest fail mode here, to Jeff's point, is like people make a plan and they don't ever look at it again. And I'm talking like they make OKRs and they don't look at it again. They don't ever look at it again. So it's how do you get these things into your day to day, which is what Jeff's saying. And I think it's really hard in reality. I mean, but like at Asana, like we had our goals in Asana and then they tied to the projects that led to those goals, which tied to the tasks. And like, that works pretty well, but you have to have also for every goal or KPI, it's really helpful to know, like, this is our goal. Here's where we're tracking it. And whether this is in a spreadsheet or in Asana or pick your project management tool, link to the dashboard that is the source of truth on it. Because people are like, I was looking at this dashboard. I thought we were hitting it. When you're setting the goals, like, you should link to those things. So to Jeff's point, like, have those things, but like, recognize that, like, yeah, you have to put effort into this. And like the organization here and the detail of like the organization and detail here of like connecting it to reports and trying to like foolproof this so you're actually using the plans. Like the number one thing I'll say is like once you make these plans, like it needs to be your goal as a manager or a leader to use them, incorporate them into your team meetings, incorporate them into async updates in Slack every week, whatever it is you do, red, yellow, green them in your spreadsheet or in Asana, like whatever it is you do, make sure you're using the plans every day. It's also going to make the planning process easier because you'll have had some of these conversations in real time. So is that Adam, real life? I don't know, Adam. Well,
I think it, unfortunately, some of that is real life, like not referring back to the plan. But Adam, you wrote a post about this when I was doing my homework around what Emily exactly just said and how you need to plan to use the plan around your rituals and using it weekly, monthly. So I'm not going to steal your thunder, but what do you mean by that?
Yeah, so it's what's the Mike Tyson quote? Everyone has a plan until you get punched in the face, all right? And so you're going to get punched in the face at some point in the year. And so I think, especially in marketing, like in sales, it's very easy. It's like go close deals, right? Like that's the sole kind of purpose of what you're trying to do. In marketing, you have 100,000 things you could be doing. It's like, should we start a TikTok channel? Hey, what about Instagram? Hey, what about this? What about that? And it's very easy when you manage a team for them to get off track and say like, hey, we're going to chase this. And a lot of times actually, like marketing leaders are the worst enemy for their own team because they'll say like, hey, why are we doing this? Or our competitor's launching this. Why aren't we doing this? Why aren't we doing that? And I think it's very easy for marketing teams to get off track of things that actually will impact the numbers they own, right? And so for me, it's always been about if I have a team, I want them to know the goals we're chasing, how we're being held responsible. I used to call it like, what's the number that's going to get me fired, right? If I have like no TikTok followers, but we hit the 3x pipeline goal, like I'm good to go. Like nobody's going to care really, right? So it's like, so what's the number I'm going to get fired off of? But I think for the marketing team, like you want everyone on the team to feel ownership over the number, because then I think when they get handed off projects or people ask them about, why aren't we doing this random thing? It's very easy for them to say, well, because it doesn't roll up into our bigger goal. And like, and I'm getting held responsible every Monday we review this number. And if I have to sit in front of the team and say like, oh, I know we talked about changing the email flow this week so we can increase the conversion rate, you know, in between like demo requested and demo show. But I didn't do that because I launched a TikTok channel. Like you're going to have some questions to answer for probably, right? And so I think it's having the goals, managing through the goals almost makes it very easy for everyone to just stay on track. And I think one of the biggest things is like, it also creates a better team environment where people feel ownership over the end outcome, right? Like they actually feel connected to like the success of the company because it's like, oh, I contributed to that and I know which piece I contributed to and I know how my work's actually contributing to the success of the company or the success of marketing and all this sort of stuff. When you don't have that, people just feel like, it doesn't really matter what I'm doing. It feels arbitrary. Like, I'm not sure why we're doing this, but we're doing this. Like, can't tell you the amount of times I work with marketing teams and I come in and I'm like, walk me through the projects you're doing and like why you're doing them. And nobody can answer the why.
They can't.
And so, I don't know, like, that we were told to do this. And I'm like, well, there must have been a reason that this happened, right? Like, you have no idea what you're trying to impact. So I think, like,
the arbitrary list of projects makes me nuts. I could do a whole intro rant on that, too. But yep. One thing there, Adam, that I tell people, like, have your arbitrary list of projects, whatever, whether it's in a spreadsheet and it's a column, or it's in Asana and it's a custom field, tie it back to your goal. Like, not your, like, whatever that goal is. If it's like, it's this project goal, you shouldn't just have like KPI goals in marketing. I actually like will put in my project or in my list of projects, here are all the goals that we laid out for the year or the quarter, and select the one it relates to. Like little things like that. And I think that's what you're talking about too with these rituals, Adam. I will read your newsletter or your post or whatever format it is in. I haven't yet. But like it's those kinds of little things that make a world of difference.
Well, this was an absolute blast to record. I'm sure it's going to be a blast to edit given some of the technical difficulties here. But I will say this now, and I promise you I've not said this for every episode that we've recorded. This was the most fun that I've had, I think, for everything that was thrown our way and for the soapbox that I loved Emily was on for most of this. This was fucking awesome, and this is exactly why we have this podcast.
Can I say two things?
Absolutely.
One, and I know you have this on the list, but like, stop calling it a bottoms up forecast. It is bottom up. It is squarely bottom up. Bottoms up is like, cheers. Like, that's bottoms up. And it just makes me crazy. It's bottom up. It's like become a really big, it's bottom up. I just wanted to say that. It's just like, please.
I prefer the bottoms up. Give me some alcohol.
I mean, I guess, like, as long as you know that you're, like, not saying the right thing, but you're like, we're going to call it the bottoms up forecast. Cheers, team. Like, that's totally cool. But it is, in fact, a bottom up forecast.
I mean, because honestly, you can look at a forecast and sometimes it looks like someone who's drunk made it. So bottoms up is real.
Mostly. Yeah, it's true. I mean, I think I made that a similar joke on LinkedIn. It's like, unless you were like drunk when you made it, it's a bottom up forecast. The other last thing, Mark, I know we're like over time, but and maybe others could weigh in on this. I feel like Jeff and Adam will feel this really hard, is like when you see like the outbound projections for the year or like the SDR projections and they're like, we're going to have this many meetings. And then you back into it and you're like, so our TAM is 250,000 companies all of a sudden. I thought it was 10. Like the amount with the conversion rates that they have, like the below 1% conversion rates, you would have to email every company in the world. Like, and none of them are in your TAM. It's so funny. Like if you go beyond, because they're just like, we did this many meetings last year, we'll triple those meetings. It's like, you don't actually even have that TAM. So I would encourage you to work that through and like say, do we actually even have like this TAM? Because same with web visitors as well, honestly.
But it's not just the TAM. You tell an SDR, you know, you're not going to sleep for the next 4 years and you're going to have to make 400 calls an hour.
Yeah.
That's how you're going to get to your number, because 1%, yeah, that's what it's going to take.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, amazing. This was a blast. Thank you, Emily, Jeff, and Adam. I actually learned a ton. I was taking a ton of notes over here as I'm going through this process. And I think a lot of what you described may have applied to me, maybe not a few weeks ago, but I've got a revenue model now and we might have to do a follow-up episode in 6 months and see how close my plan was. But appreciate you all coming on the Proof Point. Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you.